Long-term unemployed Montana workers will see an end to their extended federal unemployment benefits tomorrow. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you about a wolf and coyote derby expected to go forward tomorrow in Idaho. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with an expert about the threat of radon gas. Extended federal unemployment benefits end tomorrow, cutting benefits to over a million long-term unemployed workers around the country. Congress didn't renew the extended benefit program that began in 2008, just after the recession began, to ease pain of escalating unemployment amid the housing bubble's burst and deep dip of the stock market. The most recent federal budget agreement ended those benefits. Montana Labor Department spokeswoman Casey Kyler West says Montana has fewer long-term unemployed than many other states who will be affected.
And in Montana, that means about 539 folks will no longer receive those extended unemployment insurance benefits, or EUC. Those will end, and those are the federal unemployment benefits that were paid out for folks who had already exhausted their regular benefits. And regular benefits can go anywhere from between 8 and up to 28 weeks, depending on the person and their situation.
Montana's 5.2% unemployment rate is low compared to many other states, so the impact is less here. Still, Kyler West says it's going to be tough on those families whose benefits are ending.
We're encouraging folks who may not have already done so to sign up for SNAP benefits or TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, those types of safety nets so they can still keep their head above water until they get their back on their feet and can get reemployed.
Information about these programs is available on the State Labor Department website, dli.mt.gov.
And in other news from around the state, a judge has granted the father of a hospitalized Whitefish man the authority to make all medical decisions for his son, including removing him from life support. Chad Newton has been hospitalized in intensive care in Kalispell since November 25th when he was stabbed in the heart. His wife, Anne Marie Newton, has pleaded not guilty to felony assault with a weapon and is free after posting a $25,000 bond. KTMF-TV reports a neurologist testified at today's guardianship hearing that the chance of Chad Newton making a meaningful recovery is zero, while another doctor said Newton's condition has deteriorated and he is unable to breathe on his own. After the hearing, District Judge Heidi Ulbricht granted Billy Newton the authority to make end-of-life decisions for his 37-year-old son.
Federal prosecutors oppose a former medical marijuana lobbyist's request to be removed from probation so he can tend to his sick mother without restrictions. Assistant U.S. Attorney Joseph Thagard said in response to Tom Dobert's request that early termination is reserved for rare cases of exceptionally good behavior. Thagard says the health of Dobert's 83-year-old mother and his desire to resurrect his consulting career do not justify ending his 5-year probation sentence after only 1 year. U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen has not yet ruled on Dobert's request to be released. Dobert received the sentence in September 2012 after he pleaded guilty to maintaining a drug-involved premises. Dobert was one of the founders of a statewide medical marijuana provider that was shuttered amid a statewide crackdown in 2011.
A Missoula auto body shop has reached a settlement agreement with a federal work safety agency after an August fire killed a shop employee and injured another. The Missoulian reports the settlement calls for Rick's Auto Body to pay a $36,000 fine for numerous safety violations discovered after an explosion and fire killed 44-year-old Bruce Hall. An investigation found Hall was pouring lacquer from a barrel into a smaller container through a funnel when the fumes exploded, in part due to lack of adequate ventilation. OSHA initially proposed $51,100 in fines for fire and explosion hazards. Jeff Funk, OSHA area director in Billings, says the shop owner has undertaken corrective actions, quote, above and beyond the OSHA standard, end quote.
An 18-year-old Belgrade man faces felony kidnapping and criminal endangerment charges after prosecutors say he deprived an intoxicated juvenile of medical attention after a traumatic fall and forced her into the trunk of a car. Cameron James Alverson was arrested last night north of Belgrade. His bail was set at $10,000 during an initial appearance in justice court today. A 16-year-old boy was arrested and cited with the same felony charges. Prosecutors say the girl told investigators she was riding around with Alverson and was arguing with the 16-year-old. She jumped out of the car while it was moving, injuring her side. The girl said Alverson then put her in the trunk of the car and drove around for about 10 minutes before taking her home.
A federal judge is allowing a wolf derby to proceed on public land in Idaho, ruling its organizers aren't required to get a special permit from the U.S. Forest Service. U.S. District Magistrate Judge Candy Dale issued the ruling today, hours after a morning hearing. Wild Earth Guardians and other environmental groups had sought to stop the derby. Missoula-based Wild Earth attorney Sarah McMillan argued the Forest Service was ignoring its own rules that require permits for competitive events.
And our position was that under their own regulations, a commercial use is any, and this is the actual definition, any use or activity on National Forest System lands where an entry or participation fee is charged. And at that time, when we filed suit, the organizers of the contest were charging a $20 per person participation or entry fee.
Organizers of the derby have since dropped the entry fee, but McMillan maintains they still need to obtain a group use permit. The Forest Service, meanwhile, counters no permit is needed. Its officials concluded while hunting would take place in the forest, the competitive portion of the event, where judges would determine contest winners for the biggest wolf and most coyotes killed, would take place on private land. McMillan says her group is not anti-hunting, but they find these kinds of killing contests unethical.
We have hunters on staff. Some of our members are hunters. So we're not necessarily an anti-hunting organization. I think that, we're not an anti-hunting organization. But I would say that this is different from probably what most people in Montana would also say. You know, I think when you and I think about hunting, we think of the person who's going out to get their whitetail or their elk. And they put it in their freezer, and their family eats that meat for the rest of the year. This is trying to kill as many bodies as you can, as quickly as you can. And that's I think I'm a little reluctant, as I know a number of ethical hunters are, to even really call that hunting.
The Wolf and Coyote Derby is scheduled to be held this weekend near Salmon, Idaho.
The former human resources director for Butte Silver Bow County has filed a lawsuit against the county, arguing her firing was discussed during a closed council meeting in violation of her due process rights. The Montana Standard reports chief executive Matt Vinson fired Lindsay Moe in October after meeting with the Council of Commissioners. He says Moe was fired in large part for failing to inform him immediately that a group of employees was considering a lawsuit against the county over wage issues. Days before the meeting, Moe's attorney asked that the meeting be open to the public, but County Attorney Eileen Joyce argued that having the claims against Moe aired publicly might have a chilling effect on those who might allege wrongdoing in the future. Vincent said yesterday it would be inappropriate to comment.
The American Indian liaison for the State Department of Corrections says he's working to provide cultural awareness to agency staffers and to help Native American inmates prepare for their release. Harlan Trombley told the Great Falls Tribune that after a month on the job, he's found that corrections staff often don't understand traditional practices such as smudging when herbs are burned so the smoke can be used as a cleansing agent. Corrections Director Mike Bautista says Trombley's job is to make sure inmates who want to participate in such ceremonies have the materials and permission they need. Trombley also plans to bring in mentors from tribal communities to work with offenders. He also helps them find a job and a place to live when they finish their sentence.
Wildland firefighting has changed a lot over the years, and not everyone thinks all the changes have been positive. Retired Missoula smoke jumper Wayne Williams fought for fire for over 40 years, most of those years as a smoke jumper. Williams worries that wildland firefighting has become more about structure protection than about stopping fires. And he thinks homeowners who build in the woods need to be much better prepared for the threat of fire.
Not much different than a hurricane or an earthquake or anything else. You're far better off to build something to withstand that kind of event than you are trying to protect it. I live in the urban interface myself. The last thing I would want is for a firefighter or a crew of firefighters to die defending my house.
Williams was part of a team who found the bodies of 14 firefighters who died in the South Canyon fire on Storm King Mountain in Colorado in 1994. News Director Sally Mock will have a feature interview with Williams about changes in firefighting next week during Montana Evening Edition.
Backcountry users in northwestern Wyoming and eastern Idaho are being warned to be careful following two avalanche deaths. The Bridger-Teton National Forest Avalanche Center rated the avalanche danger as moderate above 7,500 feet today. It says clear skies and warm temperatures could lead to some afternoon slides in sunny areas. Yesterday, a 29-year-old Jackson snowboarder was buried in a slide about a half mile outside the Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. In Idaho, a 39-year-old snowmobiler also died when a slope he was climbing broke loose in the upper Palisade Lake drainage. Bonneville County Sheriff Sergeant Jeff Edwards says Rex Anderson of Arco had been buried for almost 10 minutes when he was found by friends with avalanche beacons and uncovered with shovels. CPR was performed, but Anderson couldn't be revived.
After a week parked in a southwestern Idaho highway pullout, a 380-foot, 450-ton load bound for Canada's disputed tar sands energy development will stay put at least another night. Transport company Omega Morgan told the Idaho Transportation Department today expected fog will prevent the megaload, which is a large heat exchanger for water purification equipment manufactured in Portland, from resuming its winding journey. Since Monday, the equipment has been parked at the junction of U.S. Highway 95 and Idaho Highway 55. It's bound for the rich oil sands that surround Fort McMurray, though a spokeswoman for Portland-based Omega Morgan wouldn't confirm the exact destination. Since disembarking a Columbia River barge, the shipments have drawn the ire of protesters who object to the tar sands development in northern Canada.
Washington state health officials are in the process of testing shellfish samples following toxicity concerns that prompted China to ban West Coast shellfish. Como TV reports that Washington State Department of Health technicians are now testing 36 shellfish samples from the Poverty Bay area near Federal Way. Officials have already shut down commercial gooey duck clam harvesting on 135 acres of state-owned aquatic land. Earlier this month, the state learned that Chinese authorities detected arsenic in a shipment from Washington. The state health department has traced that shipment back to clams harvested in October by the Puyallup tribe in Poverty Bay. The China import ban is creating a hardship for the state's shellfish industry since that country is a major market for Washington harvesters.
January is Radon Awareness Month. The Montana Department of Environmental Quality is encouraging Montanans to test for and, if necessary, address any radon issues. Radon is a colorless and odorless gas. Paul Chita of DEQ's Energy and Pollution Bureau tells Edward O'Brien that radon exposure can cause serious health issues.
Well, radon is a naturally occurring soil gas, generally associated with uranium, granite in the soil, certain types of soil conditions. It enters the home through cracks in the foundation, actually just minute cracks in a concrete floor. It pretty much is in all homes. Ones that have vented crawl spaces are a little bit less likely, but with the new energy code, generally basements or crawl spaces aren't vented with vents or actually conditioned space. So it enters from the ground, and it's the decay process changing the radon. It enters a decay of electronic particles, which attach to dust particles. And when people breathe those in over time, it leads to lung cancer. It's the number two cause of lung cancer in the United States. It's the number two cause of lung cancer.
I believe it's 22,000 people every year die from lung cancer.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah. So, is it accurate to say then that this is radioactive, or is that incorrect?
That would be, I think, incorrect.
So then it's a gas, and it's the breakdown of these.
Yes, it's the breakdown, the decay process of the radon gas. And it's the particles, the electronic particles that come off and are touched to dust particles, and that's what people breathe in. It changes the DNA structure of lung tissue, and lung cancer can start.
What parts of Montana are more prone to radon concentration issues than other parts of the state? Or is that a fairly complicated question to answer?
No, there was a number of studies were done. And actually, it was online, just the Montana Radon Study. And interesting, 48% of all the tests that have been done in the state, and most of them were the short-term tests. The information is confidential, but the university in Bozeman did an analysis in 1997 and again in 06 and found that 48% of all the tests that were done were above 4 picocuries per liter, and that's the action level. Pretty much all counties were in what's the EPA puts as zone one, where they recommend everyone to test. There was a couple in very central eastern Montana, a couple counties there that were zone two. I don't have the map right in front of me, but pretty much the whole state is the zone one, where the recommendation is for everyone to test their home. It's the only way you know if you have an elevated level of radon is if you do a test.
And tell us about these tests.
Well, the most common is the short-term test. That's typically a 2 to 4 day test. Put it in the lowest living area, so you wouldn't put it in a crawl space, or you wouldn't put it in the basement unless you spend, someone spends at least a couple hours or more down in the basement. And you then send them in to the laboratory, and then within a week you get the test results. All the county health departments in the state were sent kits. It's been about a year ago. They're free. People just have to call their county health departments to see if they have any left. If not, kits are usually available from home improvement stores, hardware stores. They generally are in the $20 range, something to be aware of. Some of the test kits you buy for $20, and then they want another almost $20 for the analysis. Should be able to get one where the total shouldn't be more than about $20 for the short term. The other kit is the long-term kit, and those are generally 2 to 9 months. And that's actually a more accurate reading of what the true radon level is in the home. If you check just for a couple days under windy conditions, or if the ground is frozen, you have a stack effect from the wind, you can get a elevated level for just one day. So, but the long term is the more accurate reading, and that would be what the true level is year round in the home. And what most people do to start out with the short term and go from there.
In a short term, then, that would be okay if you're considering buying a property that is, you know, an existing house already on it, or you're going to develop, you're going to dig there. Yeah.
That's what most do, because the long term, you know, if you wouldn't wait the 2 to 4 months for the results. But if you do a short term test and it comes in very high, and there's readings that come in the hundreds of picocuries per liter, you pretty much know the home has a problem, because even if you do a long-term test, it's not going to be below 4 if the level is that high just with a short-term test.
All right. So then, Mr. Cheetah, if one of these tests does reveal a problem, is it a pain in the neck to handle? How do you best mitigate it?
The mitigation process, if it's a crawl space, is placing a ground cover down. Usually it's just 6 mil black plastic. There are better grades of material, but sealing it to the edges of the foundation and any post, sealing it around that. Then have a piping, a perforated piping underneath the plastic, and then directing it up through the home if they can find a way to get it through the home. Otherwise, they go up to the top of the crawl space ceiling, then out to the other wall, and then up the side of the home. And then they usually put an inline fan in the pipe, so the fan is always pulling, drawing air from underneath the ground cover, and then discharging it above the roof line. With a basement, it's cutting a small hole, a 1 square foot hole in the basement floor, digging it out, putting in gravel, and then bringing the 4-inch pipe up through the home if they can find a pathway for that, or going across the basement ceiling, turning, going up the side of the home, and then putting a fan and that system and discharging above the roof line. The average remediation is about $1,200. It ranges from about $1,000 up to $2,500 for the remediation work to take place. Much easier when the home is, if a new home is under construction, to have the piping put in the wall, and having the gravel put in underneath the basement floor or just putting the ground cover down. It's easier in new construction, but every home can be remediated, just it can get more complicated and get more expensive.
Okay, so testing, you don't have to be a home improvement whiz to do that, but when it comes to mitigation, if there is an issue, best to call a professional.
Yeah, many people do their own remediation. It's going online, going to the EPA radon website, or our website, EnergizeMontana, MontanaSpelledOut.com. There's a link to a radon page, which will have the remediation contractors listed, and also a link to all the EPA publications. That's a popular one is a buyer's and seller's guide, a homeowner's guide to radon remediation, and then just general information about what radon is and its danger.
Okay, so not that expensive to test for. Big picture, not that expensive to mitigate, and the payoff really is huge. It's your life and it's your health.
Correct.
Okay, EnergizeMontana.com, Montana spelled out.
Yes, there is a Montana radon hotline. They can give us a call at 800-546-0483. And John Podolinski or I will answer the line.
Paul Cheetah, Department of Environmental Qualities, Energy, and Pollution Prevention Bureau. Thanks so much for your time and your information, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide, there is a winter weather advisory in effect until 11 a.m. tomorrow for the West Glacier region. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers, and expect rain showers and a chance of light freezing rain. Low should be 19 to 26 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of snow showers and highs in the upper 20s to mid 30s. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow. Highs should be in the upper 20s to mid 30s. In central Montana, there's a high wind warning in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for the Rocky Mountain Front, eastern Glacier County, Cascade, Toole, Liberty, eastern Ponderay, and eastern Teton counties. There's also a winter weather advisory in effect from 3 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow for Cascade and Marr counties. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with isolated rain showers, then scattered rain and snow showers after midnight. Low should be 5 to 20 degrees. Wind gusts could reach up to 55 miles per hour. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow through the days and highs 10 to 20 degrees. And on Sunday, it calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow and highs 25 to 35 degrees. In southwest Montana tonight, look for increasing clouds with isolated snow showers after midnight and lows 15 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow through the day and highs in the 20s. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow and highs 25 to 30 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. As many of you know, Congress has come to an agreement on the major budget issues that have delayed finalizing the funding for fiscal year 2014, which started on October 1st. Because Congress has only partially offset sequestration with this budget deal, I want to talk tonight about why it is important that we advocate on behalf of vulnerable older adults. The budget deal now approved by both houses of Congress finally gives appropriators the overall spending level needed to begin negotiating specific funding levels of each federal program. The current continuing resolution expires January 15th, which means House and Senate committees have only a few weeks to negotiate details of 12 separate appropriations bills. Their goal is to create an omnibus bill by January 6th. That single document would package together several measures and be accepted or rejected in a single vote by each legislature. Given the tight timing, some larger appropriation bills, like the Older Americans Act and the bill funding Senior Corps volunteer programs, may not get the full level of line-by-line scrutiny. They may instead end up looking like a slightly tweaked continuing resolution with across-the-board adjustments. This could put these programs in a dangerous position. If appropriators make difficult choices about which programs to invest in, not all programs will see a boost in funding. Some might even be cut in order to restore or invest in preferred programs. Thanks to political stalemates, this traditional approach to the appropriations process has suffered in recent years. A plus for Montana is that Senator Tester serves on the full Senate Appropriations Committee. A simple phone call to his Washington, D.C. office or one of his local offices across the state asking for his help is a good first step. Here are a few points you could make. With our increasing number of older adults, we need funds to subsidize those who can't afford to pay for supportive services. By 2025, Montana will rank fifth per capita in the country in terms of our aging population. Most older adults will need some type of assistance not supported by Medicare or other insurance. People will need to pay out of pocket for meals, respite, support for family caregivers, personal care services like bathing and dressing, transportation, and long-term care consultation. All areas offered by programs under the Older Americans Act. We know that living at home with appropriate supports like these is far less expensive than living in an assisted living or nursing facility. If we can't offer subsidies to people who are unable to afford in-home supports and services, they will end up going to an institution and quickly spending down to Medicaid. Ultimately, this will cost taxpayers far more money. The senior core programs, including foster grandparents, senior companions, and RSVP, are comprised of older adults who share their expertise with many local nonprofits, hospitals, schools, daycares, food banks, libraries, and programs like Meals on Wheels and Adult Protective Services across the state. Besides providing this important support to other essential programs, Senior Corps gives many older adults a sense of purpose and helps reduce the risk of depression. I'd like to share the story of a man named Al. He had a long career in theater, toured with the National Shakespeare Company, and even worked in Hollywood. Then, a life-threatening car accident wiped out his savings and left him on the verge of homelessness. He came to Missoula Aging Services, where he received assistance by our nutrition program. Now, as a foster grandparent, he receives a small stipend, which is helping his financial situation. Most importantly, he has found joy again by inspiring young people to share his love for the theater. Without your advocacy, senior core programs or those provided by the Older Americans Act run the risk of being overshadowed or ignored. We can all think of an older person who has been touched by poverty, hunger, or difficulty remaining independent or finding meaning in life. As Al's story illustrates, these programs do make a difference. His is just one example of how area agencies on aging across Montana can help our older population and those who care for them. I hope it motivates you to pick up the phone and call Montana's congressional delegation. Urge them to make it a top priority to fund the programs that help older Americans get the support they need to age successfully at home and in their communities. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services. As always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.